AM 1470. Even more information you can use. Join Dr. Alvin Stein for No Bones About It, Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m., only on WNN, South Florida's all-new Health and Wealth Network. Invine Health, a leader in high-quality and pure, fresh nutritional supplements, is excited to announce the opening of its newest store right here in Delray Beach at 1534 South Federal Highway off Lutton Boulevard in the Plaza at Delray. Stop in and take advantage of daily radio specials on condition-specific supplements. And don't forget to listen to pharmacist and nutritionist Jerry Hickey, the host of the Invite Radio Show, heard Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. with the latest nutritional news right here on AM 1470 WNN. AM 1470 with even more of what you're looking for. Tune in for All Points Bulletin with Sheriff Al Lamberti, Sunday afternoons at 2, right here on AM 1470 WNN. The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
All right, welcome back. I'm John Hollis. This is Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show. We just got done the first half of the first hour of the show, and it was the In the Rooms boys. They were here hanging out, having a great time. And, of course, if you call tonight at 888-565-1470, you do get a free sound pillow for any callers that call in. This is the Ask the Interventionist Hour. And, of course, we had a little bit of a snag. Our boy Ken Seeley got tied up on a intervention tonight. He's in Ohio. He will be calling in sometime over the next 2 hours. But we have Jerry from Intervention 911, and Jerry is a big part of Intervention 911, and he's been in the field of recovery for 14 years. Jerry, are you with us?
I am, John. Good evening.
Good evening. Jerry, give us a little bit of background on who you are and what you do, and I know you work with Ken, and how do you work that position with Ken?
Well, I'm part of a team. Intervention 911 is composed of various people, and we all work as one particular team on every single case that we're involved in. My background was originally in finance, and the recovery of my own led me to the field of addictions and recovery, where I started working in a treatment facility and found out that I had a real passion for making a difference, and led me to get in touch with Ken and the team and became part of that team. So I'm one of the interventionists in the field that actually goes out, meets with the family, works hands-on, and gets their loved one into a treatment program.
All right, very good. And you know something, we're going to go to right now we're going to go to line three to Amber. Amber's calling in from Palm City. Amber, are you with us?
Hi, how are you? Good evening. Yes, I am.
Very good, very good. And do you have a question for Jerry? Jerry does, of course, interventions along with Ken Seeley from Intervention 911. And, of course, he works with anybody that is suffering from addiction, especially family members that are, you know, maybe having some problems with other family members that are looking for help. Do you have any questions for Jerry tonight?
Sure, actually I do. I was calling because I do have a family member that is currently using, and I'm not sure how to make that initial approach. They're resistant to any suggestions for going to any meetings. And I just, you know, short of signing them into a treatment facility, which I know that we're not at that point yet. Are there any suggestions that you can offer to make that transition happen a little easier?
Well, I guess the first question that I would have is, I just heard you say, you don't think you're at that point yet. Something has led up to you asking that question. Can you give me a little bit of insight into what happened that's prompted that question?
Well, specifically it's just that I know that they're actively using, and they're, everything around them is falling apart, and they don't make that, they don't recognize, where they're using has impact. And so the fact is that it's interfering, obviously with their work. Their family life is suffering as a result of it. And right now they're just, right in the middle of denial. So they're not seeing where the active drug addiction is, a result of that.
Are you in recovery yourself, Amber?
Yes.
Okay. So, and being in recovery, you're seeing a lot of the signals that probably they've seen in you, but you're now seeing in another family member, and you're able to bring this to light, so to speak.
Right. And so, you know, we're taught to lead by example and to, show them that there's a better way of life out there, but it's really hard to make that disconnect, you know, when it's a family member that you're dealing with directly. You know, you just want to jump in and rescue and save, and I know that that's not the process, and I know that that's oftentimes, you know, I can't make them reach their bottom. They need to certainly find their way, but I want to certainly light the path.
And well, that brings up a great point, Jerry, because me and Ken have talked about it many times. It's about raising the bottom so that way
Correct.
That person can, of course, get help a little bit quicker.
Correct. And that is the intervention process. The word intervene, that's what we do. And we raise that bottom. You know, everyone has a rock bottom. There is really only one bottom for an addict or an alcoholic, and that is death. There are terrible, miserable years of agony and torture, not just for the addict and the alcoholic, but the family, the loved ones, the employers. I mean, the simple fact, Amber, that you are actually calling in with concern means that you are actually part of your loved one's disease. You're engaged in that disease in a positive way. And what we have to do is we have to become proactive instead of reactive. As families, most times we react to the addict's behavior, and that's why it's so important to, you know, there's a big difference between doing an intervention and sharing your program or 12-stepping someone. The idea of raising that person's bottom so that we don't have to, you know, we can let them know what it looks like, but they don't have to go that far, you know, down into their bottom. They don't have to lose everything. They don't have to spend years agonizing and destroying their lives and the lives of people around them. So it takes a lot of work, and there's a lot of things that can be put into place, you know. And one of the reasons that everyone in recovery will tell you they're in recovery is because they've hit their rock bottom, and that looks different for everyone. And one of the things that Ken has done that is quite remarkable is, you know, we have a model that we talk about that actually defines what that rock bottom looks like for every individual. And that's where our work with the family starts, is defining what that rock bottom looks. And once we raise that rock bottom and get them in a safe environment of treatment, those rock bottoms don't change. You know, it isn't something that we're going to say, okay, well, if you go to treatment, this all goes away, you know. Part of the recovery process is that the family, the environment, the loved ones all have to change as well to help support that loved one and continue in the recovery process.
And what we're going to do, guys, right now, Amber, we're going to ask you to just hang for a second because I'm going to go to another line, and we're going to bring on Jeffrey, who's also part of Intervention 911, and get his take on this too. Jeffrey, are you with us?
I sure am. This is Jeffrey Seltzer, and I'm actually the Vice President for Admissions for Intervention 911, but
okay.
What I do really is talk to families just like you, Amber, just like your family, and really kind of figure out what's going on and what we need to do to help your loved one. And I didn't get their first name. What is the first name of the person that needs the help?
It's a family member. They didn't give a name. Amber's on hold right now. We're getting information from her. Go ahead and give your take on it, because I want to hear your take, and then we're going to bring Amber back with us.
Well, I come from the same cloth, so I absolutely believe that the only way this person or this loved one is ever going to see that, you know, there's a problem is if we bring it to them. I mean, I take hundreds and hundreds of calls over the years from family members that have a loved one or a coworker or somebody in their life that needs help, and the problem statistically goes on for about 7 years before even a person reaches out, and then from that point we have to get the family or the people involved to get together to raise that bottom, because the addict or alcoholic, as we all know, is never going to see it, unfortunately, until something awful happens. And so the job, I think, of all of us in this organization or anybody that cares about this person, that went, or to help this family, is to you know, bring that bottom up to them and really describe what that means, because oftentimes people have heard the term rock bottom, but they don't know exactly what that means. So,
and Amber, we're on with Jeffrey, and he's been answering, of course, his thought process on what you're going through. And he asked a question: Is this a loved one, or is this somebody real close to you? What's the person's name? If you don't, you know, you don't have to use the real name. You never have to use your real name when you're calling into the show, by the way, if you're in that much fear over talking about this issue. But what is the person's name?
Shane.
Okay. And again, I think what Jeffrey and Jerry has been very, you know, adequately explaining to you is that we have to get to a point where we can raise the bottom up, because, again, if we wait for somebody to hit a bottom, that usually means death. I mean, it's either jails, institutions, or death, and there's no way around that. And the institution part of it, I mean, in this day and age, you don't really see it as much. You really see more jails and death. Would you agree, guys?
Absolutely.
And would you agree that in this particular situation with Amber, that with what she's dealing with, what are some of the things that, and she asked the question at the very beginning, what are some of the things that she can do right now as somebody that's in recovery herself to help raise that bottom for the other individual? Stop giving money. What's some of the things that they could do?
Well, the mantra needs to become, or what we really teach people, is that she, you know, to check herself and see if checking yourself to see if you're really supporting the wellness, or am I supporting the illness? Are the things that I'm doing, is it allowing the disease to continue, or are there things that I could do to stop? So, and that's a thin line sometimes, because we often think we're helping, and because we do that out of love and fear, but oftentimes it's like putting a tiny little Band-Aid on a huge wound, or we do it because we don't want the person to be in pain. But sometimes it's that pain that a person absolutely needs to feel, for their own personal consequence. So the first thing I would say you need to do is really kind of do your own inventory about, you know, am I helping this situation, or what are some of the things I could stop doing that can, you know, allow the disease to continue? So like you said, is it money? Is it, you know, taking their phone calls late at night? Is it, you know, putting my life on hold for them? Am I, you know, do you sit and walk, you know, walk on eggshells, you know, waiting for the next, you know, upheaval or catastrophe? Or, you know, are you able to detach from this person? So there's got to be a lot of soul searching and a lot of inventory taking of how, you know, what is my involvement in this?
And Jerry, what's your take on it?
First and foremost, you know, everyone that's involved in Shane's life and that has concern for him, you know, there can no longer be any secrets. I mean, it has to be openly discussed. I mean, the environment that the disease thrives in is one where it doesn't seem like everyone has an understanding of what's really going on in the person's life. Some of those family members, you know, may have some denial. When you bring it to the surface and you talk about it openly, it certainly helps with that denial. But we also want to look at our enabling behaviors. You know, are we changing our routine at the holidays because someone is using? Are we not inviting someone over? Are we actually changing or tiptoeing around the disease? And basically, we have to unite with everyone that's involved in the process to show a united front that says, you know, these behaviors are no longer acceptable. You know, we cannot accept the disease behavior anymore. And what needs to happen is, you know, we need to set some healthy boundaries. We need to talk about, you know, what is healthy, what is acceptable, and what isn't. And we need to help move Shane to his bottom. Our healthy boundaries of staying healthy may help him directly move into him seeing that bottom. You know, there's different areas where someone hits the bottom. Usually the family has a lot of direct control over that emotional bottom. You know, so saying, listen, you know, I cannot talk to you any longer if you are asking me for money. I cannot talk to you any longer if you are calling me at 2:00 in the morning and you're crying about, you know, how terrible your life is. You know, we have to change everything that we're doing and change the environment, because, you know, the reason that an addict uses, or the reason that someone drinks in a family environment, is because the environment allows it to happen. You know, we have to be proactive. We don't just turn people out and kick them out in the street and do all of those things. We have to take action, be proactive, and point them towards their bottom, help them get to their bottom, and support them only in recovery, not in the disease.
Jerry, you know, and I like what you're saying, Jerry and Jeffrey both. But you know, and I know that there's people out there. And Amber, I know you're still with us, but I'm gonna put this in there. How many people are saying to themselves right now, that's so much easier said than done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why it's we use a formula. Most of the time to get to a place. I mean, there has to be certain steps. I mean, well, hello. We all know there's steps in our lives that got us to a certain place. And so the steps that we use in this model that Ken has designed, because it's not as easy as just walking in and saying, hey, either go to treatment or I'm taking your car keys away, or go to treatment or you're out in the streets. Because we don't want Shane to go to treatment because he feels threatened. We want Shane to go to treatment because he feels loved. We don't want to go toe-to-toe with him at all. I mean, he would love that, or his disease would love that. We want to go heart-to-heart with him and really disarm him. And so using this model, which we call the HELPS model, which I'm sure you've heard of before through Ken,
mm-hmm.
and then these five levels are actually six because the E stands for not only emotional but environmental, we have to really change everything on five levels and bring it to him, I should say, on five levels, on his health, on his emotional level, like Jerry said, on his environment, what does that look like, on any legal issues that have or have not happened, on a personal financial level, because I'm sure it's affecting him on all areas of his life. And then, as far as I'm concerned, most importantly, on a spiritual level, because he's obviously not at peace. And so, really seeing what on those levels, how can we bring that bottom up to him? And then, but the big part is you got to get, because you're right. I mean, it's easier said than done, because you got to get prepared to be able to do it. I mean, I could list it. I could read books. I could, there's tons of books. I could talk to. I can go to seminar after seminar. But I have to get in the place in my heart that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to, or Amber, you do, or and family members, to do whatever it takes to save his life. Because there's no sugarcoating it anymore. There's no tough love. There's no this and that. We have to go all the way. And that's what we do when we do interventions. I was on a call, an after call, I should say, with the team today after Ken just got finished with a very difficult intervention. And it was, a different kind of issue, but it was still getting that family on board to raise that rock bottom and follow the direction of a professional, or follow the direction of a team of people. So there, but before even that happened, people have to get in their hearts and say, you know what, I'm going to do whatever it takes, because I just can't stand by and watch Shane kill himself.
And Amber, one of the things that he just brought up that really makes a lot of sense, and I'm going to ask you this question based on your information, how many family members are pro to him getting help?
Oh, everyone is supportive. I mean, off the top of my head, there's four direct family members that are impacted.
And out of that four, everybody, if you called them up tonight and said, hey, listen, you know something? I want to talk with an interventionist and have an intervention done for your loved one, Shane. Would they all be in agreement, or would you have some people saying, well, I don't think it needs to go that far yet?
Well, I think they would need some more information, before they would be able to make that commitment. I think that when the gentleman had talked about the boundaries and the consistency, on our part is required. And that's the, the fine line that he was referring to. It's very hard to make that decision. At what point do you say, no more cash, no more couch to sleep on, but if you're willing to stop using and willing to go to any lengths for it, we support you 100%. But we can't make that we can't make that determination on our own. So, I think, initially, everybody would be willing to participate, for the good of Shane and ultimately to save his life. But at the same time, it might be a little scary process if they don't have firsthand experience. Two of those family members are not in recovery. So, we're dealing with all different personalities and knowledge and experience. And that may, you know, in my mind, complicate the situation a little further.
And Amber, that is exactly why, in most cases, it's so important to have a professional intervention. You know, I want to touch base, you know, about it being difficult, you know, and kind of what gets us moving. You know, one of the things that I tell families is that, you know, when the family is at their rock bottom, then the addict has a chance. The family is part of that environment, and the family has to be at their rock bottom in order to be able to change their behaviors so that we can help change. And you're always going to have people of different opinions and varying thoughts and people who minimize and people who don't have a full understanding. Part of the intervention process itself is making sure that everyone, before the intervention takes place, is prepared. We prepare, we prepare, we prepare. They understand the disease. They understand that some of the things that they may have to do, some of those boundaries that need to be in place to instill consequential thinking, which will help Shane to recovery, may feel uncomfortable. But as a unit, as a unified team, it's much easier to bring everybody together and say, you know what, not only am I going to support this healthy boundary, but I'm going to support you, mom, or you, dad, or you, wife, or you, husband. Part of the power of the intervention is making sure that everyone has a clear understanding of what the process is. Because if we just ask someone, hey, do you want to go to treatment today? Of course they don't want to go to treatment today.
Oh, yeah.
They're working on how am I going to get high today? It is a hard job for an addict to figure out how they're going to get high every day or how an alcoholic is going to attempt to hide their drinking when everyone else knows what's going on. So part of that process is making sure that everybody who's involved in the intervention is on the same page. That's why it's important to have a professional, because one of the things that we do is make sure that the family is at their rock bottom.
What we're going to do, guys, I want you to hang on, Amber. I want you to hang on, Jeffrey and Jerry. We're going to be back. We've got to take a station break. When we come back right after this message, we're going to talk more about intervention and how we can help this family. We'll be back right after this message.
Summer means more time in the sun, and for me, that means sunburn. When I have a sunburn, I reach for my Willard Water Aloe Gel. Aloe Vera, commonly known as the burn plant, has been used to ease the pain of sunburn for more than 4,000 years. When paired with Willard Water, customers find it has a truly remarkable effect on sunburns. Studies have shown that Willard Water helps dull the pain that often accompanies sunburns. Willard Water helps the body heal itself faster by accelerating our body's natural healing processes. Willard Water Aloe Gel helps moisturize the skin, which combats the dryness caused by sunburns and helps the body heal naturally. When you're looking for a natural remedy to sunburns, nothing eases the pain better than Willard Water Aloe Gel.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
My name is John Hollis, and of course I'm with Holistic Lifestyles Radio, and we want to talk about Crossroads of Antigua, helping people take the first step towards change. Do you know somebody struggling with addiction to alcohol, prescription medication, or other drugs? Crossroads Center of Antigua provides comprehensive detoxification, treatment, and continuing care services within a holistic body, mind, and spirit approach to recovery. Founded by Mr. Clapton, Eric Clapton, Crossroads Center is recognized as one of the top 10 international programs for addiction services. Crossroads provides quality, affordable care for individuals and their families. Call now for a free, confidential assessment and speak with one of course, their admission counselors. Give them a call at 877-318-8834 or check out the website at crossroadsantigua.org. And remember, recovery is possible and is often life-saving.
You are listening to the Holistic Step Sober House of Pompano Beach. Has been part of the 12-step community for 14 years, and they've helped thousands of people to recover from addiction and the issues surrounding addiction. First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach is a sober living community built on the 12-step approach. male or female, you can learn to be responsible again. Their 3 to 6 month intensive sober living house features a compassionate and structured program, and they work with attorneys and the courts. Call the First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach today, 954-942-7414. That's 954-942-7414. Or go online to firststepsoberhouse.com. Remember, if the elevator to your success is broken, you must take the step. Take the first step today by calling First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach, 954-942-7414. Or go online to firststepsoberhouse.com. You are listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, holisticlifestylesradio.com. That's holisticlifestylesradio.com. Now, back to today's show.
All right, welcome back. We want to thank our sponsors for tonight. First Step Sober House, Chris D's in the room.
Hello, hello.
We also want to thank, of course, Crossroads Center of Antigua. And we also want to thank Willard Water for making this hour possible. And, of course, the Ken Seeley Ask the Interventionist show. Ken has been out on days of doing an intervention. So we have Jeffrey and Jerry from Intervention 911 with us. And, Jeffrey, you just tuned in with us. Just give a little bit of background. I know you've been there 14 years. Give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Well, I've been in recovery for 14 years. I've been with Ken probably... Oh, hang on. I had to do an intervention on my kids just now to stop messing with the phone.
To do an intervention on the kids. I love it.
So I've been with Ken coming up on a little over 4 years, and I've been working in the field almost as long as I've been in recovery, so since 1997. And when I'm not working for intervention, I work for a facility called Scripps Hospital from the Scripps family in a place called the McDonald Center. I think really, you know, had my own roads and of tough roads of recovery, including a relapse and then back on track. But there's nothing like helping families. And I think I do it because someone obviously, you know, did it for me long ago, but more of the old fashioned type, the type I described where, you know, my family just said either get help or we're through. And, you know, I got that, but I think it was a while before I really internalized anything and was just very angry for a while. I think that's what Amber said, you know, worried about, you know, Shane maybe getting upset or angry. I'm not sure if she said that, but I deal with that a lot where families feel that, you know, they're worried about the, you know, them stomping their feet off the treatment, which is fine as far as I'm concerned. But my passions lie in helping families, and this is what I do pretty much every waking hour. When I'm not in a treatment center, I'm on the phones working with families all across the country, like Amber's, and so it's...
And you know something, it takes a lot to be in the trenches. Amber, are you with us?
I am.
Amber, you know, and I think it needs to be said that anybody that makes this phone call, that picks up the phone and makes a phone call to an 800 number... to talk about this type of issue takes a lot of guts. And I think it takes a lot of, not, you know, the guts and the courage, but it also takes a lot of faith that you're putting the information out there and you want to get the best information back. Jeffrey and Jerry, talking in regards to the help that this person needs, Shane needs at this point, we were going out at the break talking about the family members. And all, when you deal with interventions, do you have sometimes the splintered family that says, you know something, I don't want to be a part of this, or I'm afraid to be a part of this? Because I know me and Ken have done a show. We did a show with a family that was like that. It was over a three-week time period. And at the very beginning, everybody was splintered. Everybody said they didn't want to have anything to do with it but one, and by the end of the show, everybody was involved.
I think it's a good way to talk about it is kind of the teamwork that we do, mm-hmm. because I'll talk to the families initially and then do the pass down to Jerry, for instance, on what's going on with the family, and then he'll do the actual intervention. So I think, and so when I initially Hang on one second here. I got to switch phones.
No problem. No problem. I think one of the, Jerry, you understand the question, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, most families, first of all, if they're involved in the process, it's because they care about the loved one. You know, they would care about Shane. And, you know, they spend tremendous amounts of energy, tremendous, in some cases, amounts of money, you know, to give that person help. And sometimes the form of help that families give to the addict or the alcoholic, maybe to someone other than an addict or alcoholic could be healthy, but in fact enable that disease. So, you know, we spend a lot of time. And interesting enough, what I have found in my experience is usually when you have a family member that is there out of concern, but they're really opposed to the idea of the intervention, or they're opposed to bringing it up amongst all the family members. Working with that particular person in a lot of cases has become the strongest person on a lot of the different intervention teams that I have worked, and the day of the intervention also carry the most impact because the addict or the alcoholic is not expecting that person to be on board with the process. And usually that's a result of manipulation. When you sit down with that person and you talk about the behaviors and you talk about, you know, this was said to this family member, this was said to that family member, and you start connecting the manipulation and making sure that everyone really sees those true behaviors, most people will acknowledge, yes, there is a problem. And most people are there because they have one goal, and that is helping the loved one. And when we get them to see that this isn't about anything other than saving, in this case, Shane's life, and saving a life can look many different ways. It doesn't necessarily mean literally pulling someone out of a burning building, but often cases with an addict, for all intents and purposes, you are pulling someone out of a burning building, but saving the family's life as well because of the agony and the stress that it takes on them. So usually when we have those oppositions, you know, we spend a tremendous amount of time making sure everyone is on the same page and bringing them together. And the person that has the opposition, I have found, is usually a very, very vital and key role in the intervention process itself.
Amber, let me ask you a question because I know you're sitting and you're listening to the whole process. Let me ask you one question that really is like sparking in my brain right now. Which person out of everybody do you think is the weakest link?
One of the sisters.
One of the sisters. Okay.
Yeah, so, and it may just be because she doesn't understand what her role would be.
That makes
sense. And that's why that the meeting before, because you can't just go into this and, you know, because you watch a show or read a book and kind of figure. So the time before, I mean, that process, that meeting before, that is usually about sometimes a 6-hour process just with family members. And because there are, I mean, I'll speak to families on the phone and then I'll have a conference call. So I'll speak to the initial person like you, Amber, and then and we'll kind of get all the team members or the players, so to speak, that are involved and who's, you know, what their role is, how much history do they have, where they, you know, where you think they'd be. And so to kind of take the burden off of you, we'll have a conference call so nothing gets lost in translation as far as explaining the process. But there are, and so, you know, it's just like when you're in a group therapy session or if you're at a meeting or something like that, you know, the group will never lie to you, but there's that one kind of conspiracy theorist, or they just don't know enough, and the naysayers are sometimes a little bit, and they need some nudging to get on board, and that's why that pre-intervention meeting, or the meeting you would have the evening before you would do an intervention, because you always do an intervention first thing in the morning, because that's when people are most vulnerable.
I never knew that. You do it first thing in the morning?
Oh, the crack of dawn. I mean, because we're all cranky in the morning, right? I mean, you know, we're all a little bit vulnerable first thing. So it's the steps to take. I mean, so sometimes Jerry could be, you know, I'll talk to an initial family and I'll say, well, there's Auntie Sue and she's kind of, you know, she understands that Johnny needs some help, but you know, she's still worried about outcomes, and she's a thinker about percentages and things like this. So once Jerry gets that information from me, and I'll get that from the conference call where everyone's, yes, we're ready to do this, but then the one's kind of a on the fence. And so Jerry will get in that pre-intervention meeting, or Ken or any of our interventionists, and that's the one they spend the most time with. Well, usually that one and moms, because moms are, of course, the big enablers, and really getting them to really understand that, they need to get out of their heads and into their hearts and understand if they don't do something that something, whatever it is, if, you know, that, then that, person, you know, like Shane is, it's just, the outlook is awful. I mean, it's a, remember, it's a fatal illness if left untreated. And so that's how we really bring it to these people, as if it was any other illness. Cause, and then you say to them, like this person, one of the sisters, you'd say, well, if it was cancer, what would you do? And then she'll say, well, anything. Well, then that's what we have to do here. Because if we don't treat this, he's going to die.
Does Shane have any legal issues that you know of?
He's currently on probation for another year.
For another year? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's another way that we can look at the actual intervention, too, because that can be something held over the person's head. If they haven't been, you know, picked up by their PO, that's something that could be held over their head as far as raising that bottom. Is that correct, guys?
It's the
absolutely.
L in the help model. What do you say, Jerry?
I just came back from working on a case, too, and, you know, I'm very careful, especially when I'm explaining to the family, because, you know, one of the things that I don't want families to think, or Amber, I don't want you to think, is this is not, it's not a shaming event. You know, we want to preserve Shane's dignity. And what I mean by that is we don't want to make threats. We don't want to say, if you don't go to treatment, this is what's going to happen. There's always choices, but I always will let the person know, you know, and I would say to Shane, I believe you have a right to know what the consequences of your choices are today. You know, if someone is choosing their disease over the love and the care of their family, you know, then that really says to us, wow, you know, he really, really is in his disease, you know, so we really have to take an aggressive approach to help him. And if that's the case, we can no longer conceal any information that the probation officer may need to know, because the drug courts do a wonderful job of helping people into recovery with court-mandated treatment. We have team members that participate in drug court. Ken loves drug court. I love drug court. There is no right or wrong way. If we're helping Shane, that's what's important. But that is absolutely a tool that can be explained to him that is a natural consequence of him choosing to continue with his disease behavior over that of recovery and the love of his family.
Is there also a way that, I mean, at this point, and it sounds like, Amber, you're looking for relief, and is there a way, guys, for them to be able to maybe go to the drug court in their area and say, hey, listen, we're running into an issue? You are out of Palm City, Florida, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're out of Palm City, Florida, and, of course, in the, you know, of course, the legal end down here in Florida, you can do a Baker Act or you can do a Marchman Act. Actually, a Marchman Act is better for this situation, correct, guys?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, the longer term, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a 30 days that they would be, in the program. Is that correct?
A Marchman Act is primarily used for substance abuse. The Baker Act is primarily used for mental illness. And it can be filed two ways. There are attorneys in Florida that specialize because there are dates that need to be met. And they can actually be, a Marchman Act can actually be filed ex parte and served. And then the sheriff will actually, they will not arrest Shane. They would escort him to treatment. It's a civil proceeding. It's not a criminal proceeding. And then the family shows up for a hearing, and then they can mandate treatment through the process. In other words, there are several court dates, but it can be up to 6 months of treatment on the initial marking act.
And Amber, again, I'm really glad that you had the guts and the fortitude to pick up the phone and make a phone call. Is there any other questions that you have for the guys tonight?
No, I thank you very much. I think it's very encouraging. And, you know, even as a recovering addict myself, it's helpful to know that, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it's easier said than done. And just talking about it out loud to professionals that, you know, that have experience in this process, it's just been very helpful to reduce my stress. And you know, I feel like perhaps I should know the answer. And I see both sides of it, you know, both sides of the torn family. I get it. It's just very hard to, you know, stand by and watch it happen. And at the same time, you know, you can't force someone to hit their bottom, but certainly I can buy into raising that bottom. So that has been most helpful during this discussion, and I thank everyone for all your input.
What I'm also going to do, Amber, is let you know that you can give us a call tomorrow at 888-565-1470, or you can call us at 877-799-8773. They're both phone numbers that you can call in and get information. And if you and your family want to come back and maybe talk everybody together next Sunday, we're more than welcome to do that. And again, when you call into the show, you don't have to use your real names. You can, you know, if you feel comfortable using, we've had people call in and use other names. We don't have a problem with that. It's about getting the information in your hands. And so if you want to pull everybody together and they want to call in all on one call, we have no problem doing that with you.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night, Amber. God bless.
Thanks, Amber.
Guys, we're going to ask you to hold on for us, and we're going to go to our next break. If you're listening out there, we want you to call 888-565-1470. And, of course, you can get on the line and talk about interventions, talk about addiction issues, whatever's going to help you tonight. We'll be back right after this message.
30 years ago, 60 Minutes traveled to South Dakota to meet Dr. John Willard and to examine his miraculous Willard Water. What they discovered was thousands of people all over the world were using Willard Water to better their health. As 60 Minutes found, the claims seem unbelievable, but the results are undeniable. Scientific studies show that Willard Water can help our bodies absorb more of the vitamins and nutrients we need for good health. They also show that Willard Water helps make cells stronger and more resistant to disease. Willard Water helps the body heal itself. And it does all this without the toxins found in over-the-counter medications. Willard Water is not a fad. It's been helping people for more than 40 years. Become one of the thousands of people who use Willard Water every day. To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
The First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach has been part of the 12-step community for 14 years, and they've helped thousands of people to recover from addiction and the issues surrounding addiction. First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach is a sober living community built on the 12-step approach. Male or female, you can learn to be responsible again. Their 3 to 6 month intensive sober living house features a compassionate and structured program, and they work with attorneys and the courts. Call the First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach today, 954-942-7414. That's 954-942-7414. 7414, or go online to firststepsoberhouse.com. Remember, if the elevator to your success is broken, you must take the steps. Take the first step today by calling First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach, 954-942-7414, or go online to firststepsoberhouse.com.
My name is John Hollis, and of course I'm with Holistic Lifestyles Radio, and we want to talk about Crossroads of Antigua, helping people take the first step towards change. Do you know somebody struggling with addiction to alcohol, prescription medication, or other drugs? Crossroads Center of Antigua provides comprehensive detoxification, treatment, and continuing care services within a holistic body, mind, and spirit approach to recovery. Founded by Mr. Clapton, Eric Clapton, Crossroads Center is recognized as one of the top 10 international programs for addiction services. Crossroads provides quality, affordable care for individuals and their families. Call now for a free, confidential assessment and speak with one of course, their admission counselors. Give them a call at 877-318-8834 or check out the website at crossroadsantigua.org. And remember, recovery is possible and is often life-saving.
You are listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, holisticlifestylesradio.com. That's holisticlifestylesradio.com. Now back to today's show.
All right, welcome back. John Hollis, Chris D. from the First Step Sober House. And, of course, we have Jeffrey and Jerry from Intervention 911 in for Ken Seeley tonight, who has been working diligently on getting somebody into treatment, and it was a success. Is that correct, guys?
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yep.
And we have Jody from Iowa that's giving us a call tonight. Jody, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And, Jody, I understand that you have you're having some problems tonight with a family member. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and what's the situation, and let's talk about it, and, you know, let the guys know what's happening.
Okay, well, I wish I would have had this opportunity a year ago. We kind of got the cart before the horse. I talked him into going into treatment a year ago in May, and he completed the treatment, and he got out, and he came home, and he started closet drinking. And, I'm recovering meth addict myself, so I guess I either didn't want to see it or just didn't see it. And a lot of things had happened, and the last straw was he had driven the car into the ditch because he was drunk and angry, and myself and two children were in the car. And so I had said, that's it, you're not getting the keys anymore, you know, instead of just saying, that's it, you need to leave, you know. And so I took the keys, and in November, I had went to bed, and he had grabbed the keys after I was in bed and asleep, and I got a call waking me up, and he had crashed the car into a building. And at that point, I knew that, you know, he's going to end up killing himself or me or the kids. And so I had said, that's it. My bottom line to you is that you have to leave because this is madness and you're pulling me with you. You know, I just felt every day it was just horrible, that horrible feeling of what's next, you know, what's going to happen next, or, you know, and it was just pulling me away from where I needed to be. And I did end up getting him to go back to treatment again. And, you know, but it was all because he thought he was going to come home. And, you know, I had tried to explain to him that, you know, this is where we're at now. And we got him into a treatment center, and they had said that, you know, there was a year recovery house that he could go to. And everybody was in agreement. I had everybody on board. You know, we were all talking, and this is what we're going to do, and we're not going to take his calls, and, you know, all the things that I thought I was supposed to do. And then, you know, he's a very charismatic person, and now everybody's caving. And so they took him out of this year-long program.
Wow.
And now they have him put into an apartment, and they have him, you know, and he's closet drinking again. And, you know, I've got two kids, and I don't, you know, now what do I do, you know?
Jerry, do you have an answer for this?
Yeah, first thing that you need to do is your thinking is correct. You have to make sure that you're taken care of, you know, mentally and emotionally. And, you know, I heard you say that you're recovering addict, correct? Is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You know, one of the things that I would suggest first and foremost is that you also attend Al-Anon. I believe that Al-Anon would be a great area of support moving forward with you, but also ensuring the children's safety. And I think that, you know, it would be very appropriate to gather all of the family members that were originally supporting and the family members that, you know, are now caving, and set up a meeting and say, you know, we had a plan in place where, you know, he was going to be in a structured environment, and he was going to be accountable to the, you know, the sober living facility and accountable to the rest of us that he made this commitment, and not everyone is supporting that. And as a result, you know, he has found that it's acceptable for him to return to his disease.
Well,
and
it's almost like they made a pact to enable by just moving him out of there, correct?
Correct, exactly. But by bringing everybody together, you know, not to point the finger, not to point blame, but to say, listen, as a result of, you know, not holding him accountable and not saying, listen, you know, we love you, but we're only going to support, you know, your recovery. And this is what your recovery looks like for the first year to build that foundation, which is so important. Here we are, you know, and if anyone is not on board with this, you know, please share why you're not on board. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about how we can get him back, you know, into a facility, keep him accountable. And a lot of cases, too, you know, it's very important. One of the things that we do at Intervention 911 is we do case management where we actually work with the families and we work with, you know, the addict or the alcoholic for a period of a year, and we put into place family contracts, you know, by gathering that family together and having the family accountable not only to, you know, supporting only recovery, but to each other. You know, everybody has a family contract, and then there's a contract, you know, with the addict, with the alcoholic that says, you know, these are the expectations. This is how we're going to hold you accountable. And if you're not in compliance, and this can work the same for the family, if the family isn't in compliance, there's consequences. You know, and it's not always, you know, major consequences. You know, it's something that is understood that, hey, you know, this is someone's life. We're a part of this. We chose to be a part of this. And just as we expect the addict, the alcoholic to make a commitment, you know, the family members have to make a commitment too. So we don't want to point the finger and we don't want to put blame, but I think we need to get everybody in the same room so that all of it can be discussed and put a family contract together so that they can have a plan of action to move forward and get him back where he needs to be in recovery and moving forward.
Jody, does that make sense?
Yes.
And do you believe that, and this is a question, Jerry, that I'd like to have answered as far as the contract is concerned, even though he went through the situation that he went through and the family members collectively got him out of there and they felt that for whatever reason they were doing a great thing for him, and it sounds like it was a disservice and a distraction from his recovery. But one of the things that could happen right now is you could actually go back to the contract where if he, you know, is in this position where he has his own place and they're backing him this way, if he messes that up with the contract, he would end up back in treatment. Is that the way you would go with it?
Well, yes. However, depending on what he's, you know, depending on what he's drinking, he probably needs to go back and detox.
Okay.
You know, that is, you know, part of the consequences of returning to the disease and drinking again. You know, for a multitude of reasons, and some of them being medical, but if you binge drinking or closet drinking, you know, we all know that, you know, the disease doesn't stop just because the drink was put down. So there's also could be complications there as well. You know, I don't know that, you know, sending someone back to treatment just because we want them to go someplace else is necessarily the answer, but I do think that probably a detox is appropriate. And then it can be discussed as to, you know, what that contract looks like and what are those consequences. But it's important to have one in the family or an outside person managing the family and holding everyone accountable, including the alcoholic, to what they've agreed to. Because if no one is agreeing to it, and they say, okay, well, you can just stay in that apartment and you can go to meetings and you can do this, he's going to choose the disease because the disease is going to be allowed to exist in that apartment.
And I the things that start to happen in that situation, your brain starts talking to you. You're not sober by no means. You've been through the spin cycle, so to speak. Your brain's still actively talking to you like a diseased brain, and of course you're getting all of the outcomes, and you end up like isolating yourself from people, places, you know, people, places, and things that are healthy from you, healthy for you. Would you agree? I think Jerry would agree. I hope that he gives us a call back, Jerry from Intervention 911. Jody, does this make sense to you?
Yeah, it does, especially about the party.
And let me ask you, when you start looking at the contracts that, of course, you know, Jerry was just talking about, and the things that Jerry was discussing with you, you understand that there are ways that you can help an addict that doesn't want to be helped. You've already seen that process. You got them in there. Now you might have to go through it again. You understand that, correct?
Yeah.
And
yep.
Are you okay with that? I mean, where's your heart with that? I mean, you must be saying to yourself, God, you know, this really sucks to have to go through this again.
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, my anger lies with this disease. It doesn't lie with him. He's a good man. You know, I'm a good person. Disease of addiction takes those people and just runs with them. And so my anger is at the disease. It's not at him. But am I willing to, you know, I'll go to the mat for him because we have two babies together, you know? And so, you know, but I think the point about having a third party is absolutely what needs to happen now.
Jerry, you back with us?
I am back.
Okay, very good. And again, I think Jody just said it all. If you weren't listening, if you weren't able to hear it because you, you know, fell off, one of the things that she just eloquently said is that she's willing to do whatever it takes and go to the mat. But most importantly, what we're going to do right now is have Jody hold on for us. We're going to finish up right after the top of the hour, and then we have Doug from California that's going to come on right after. We'll be back right after this message.
The Challenges Relapse Prevention Treatment Program is focused exclusively on relapse treatment and relapse prevention. Challenges is a state-licensed and JOCO-accredited private addictions and mental health treatment center. You'll find cutting-edge technology together with traditional treatment, 12-step and alternative treatment therapies for those challenged by alcoholism and drug abuse, as well as dual-diagnosed disorders. At Challenges, the treatment model for relapse prevention represents a new and unique direction in relapse care. Remember, relapse ends at Challenges. For questions and information, go online to challenges-program.com, or for immediate help, call toll-free 888-755-3334. That's 888-755-3334.
The First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach has been part of the 12-step community for 14 years, and they've helped thousands of people to recover from addiction and the issues surrounding addiction. First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach is a sober living community built on the 12-step approach. Male or female, you can learn to be responsible again. Their 3 to 6 month intensive sober living house features a compassionate and structured program, and they work with attorneys and the courts. Call the First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach today, 954-942-7414. That's 954-942-7414. Or go online to firststepsoberhouse.com. Remember, if the elevator to your success is broken, you must take the steps. Take the first step today by calling First Step Sober House of Pompano Beach, 954-942-7414. Or go online to firststepsoberhouse.com.
WWNN, Pompano Beach.
Thank you. The opinions expressed on the sponsored program were strictly those of its host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
WWNN, Pompano Beach.
If you are taking vitamins, minerals, or other supplements, how do you know that you're taking the correct amount? If you're on a diet, how do you know that the diet is correct for you? Fortunately, you do not have to guess about your nutritional health anymore. Hi,